Welcome to session 5. Today our session is called The Problem is Rarely the Problem. Louise Hay. Louise Hay was right. And remembering that the problem is rarely the actual problem. It is just a masking of what we really need to address or deal with is really helpful. One way we discover the real issue is through journaling. So, how are you enjoying your journaling or morning pages? You may find it really easy, or perhaps you're writing, "I have no idea why I'm writing this." That's what we all do when we first started. But now it's enjoyable, dumping all that stuff and then starting the day full of hope, excitement, and not thinking about all of those negative things as we have left them in our journals. And how about the emotional ladder? Have you been moving up on the scale? That's something to just keep being aware of and know it's a ladder, not a high jump. One step at a time is what it's all about. There are so many books saying think positive, which can be such a tall order when you feel unwell or far from happy. The ladder helps us to realise that you don't have to feel happy. You just have to find a way to feel a little bit better than you did, and then a little bit better again. Once I learned this, then life and recovery started to seem a bit easier. How many times have you asked yourself, why have I developed this condition? You see others who seem to take very little care of their health and yet they don't develop any symptoms. Well, today you will learn about what predisposes us to develop a chronic exhaustive condition and shed some light on why some of us are prone to struggle with ME symptoms. Also, this week we have a great interview with Linda Cairns, support worker with the National ME Centre, who has a powerful recovery story and gives some great tips and insights. But first, we revisit the 6 phases of recovery and give you a deeper understanding of phase 3, external search, and phase 4, internal search. Phase 3, external search, defined by the condition. This stage develops because nobody has been able to help you make sense of the myriad of symptoms that are part of the illness. When a GP or consultant offers a possible diagnosis without a specific treatment or recovery plan, it can feel devastating. The initial relief of knowing what your illness is called subsides when each day goes by and seemingly nothing changes. This is the most isolating phase and is when a sufferer can eventually become defined by their illness. They are now classified as an ME/CFS sufferer or a fibromyalgia sufferer. This can prey on your mind all of the time. Your brain needs and wants to have a reason why things have happened. Because we like to have predictability in our lives, and in this case, there is no clear outcome, so the external search begins. If you came across books or websites, you may have discovered frightening stories or predictions of needing a wheelchair and only having a future of managing an illness and living on benefits. These outmoded forms of information will give percentages showing the scary odds that this is how it is and how your life is to be. Many of us read stories in these books and on forums about loss. Jobs will have been given up and normal roles like parenting or just being able to keep friendships going are now seemingly impossible. Another aspect of phase 3 is isolation, which is so damaging, especially when those around you don't understand what you're experiencing or can't deal with it. When what you need is guidance and the right support dynamic. Over the years, we have spoken to the parents of children suffering with ME, and they're totally lost, not knowing what to do for the best to help their children. This can leave whole families stuck in phase 3. Everyone becomes defined by the sufferer's situation, and life as they once knew it gets hijacked. The immobility really bites in this phase and causes a knock-on effect if left to continue, and acute depression quite understandably follows. It is essential to get the right level of movement back into the body, and this is why we have the Yoga Hub, and we invite experts on movement to advise recoverers on the appropriate movement for each phase of recovery. These experts include osteopaths Gary Weir and Michaela Webb, specialist MI and fibromyalgia yoga teachers like Jane Montague Wench from Yoga Life Studios, Alexander Technique teachers like Barbara King, and me, Rosie Haysom. I will be with you on the hub to support your rehabilitation and get you moving safely. These sessions with our recovery teams, including the physio team for long COVID, give essential input that helps those members who have been immobile for a long time to reintroduce movement in a gentle and supportive way, so the fear is taken out of moving. In phase three, external search is the phase in which a sufferer craves a cure and looks to the medical profession for answers. Or you find yourself trying an endless round of therapies and treatments that you give up on because you don't get the quick fix that you're desperate for. This is one of the most challenging phases to get through because people are left to flounder, and the stress of symptoms and the consequences of the condition will have stripped away much of the life you had before you got sick. Phase three, the external search, can last a very long time if it's not intercepted by someone who understands this phase. New symptoms emerge as the sufferer withdraws into a world of symptoms. The only respite may be support groups, who may focus on the symptoms rather than recovery. It's at this point that sufferers can get stuck, give up, and resign themselves to a lifetime of living with a chronic condition. And their attention may turn towards attending workshops for chronic conditions to manage symptoms and fundraising for a cure. There are beliefs and fears about never being able to recover and be independent. A sinister development that can happen is that some people get very angry and bitter, and they are so convinced that a cure must be found by the medical research that they actively attack anyone that mentions recovery. We can totally understand why people get stuck in this belief pattern, rejecting any possibility that their emotions, mindset, past trauma or lifestyle will have contributed to their current symptoms, condition and illness. If someone is unwilling to look at these possibilities and take some personal responsibility, it's sadly impossible to help them move forward. To move through this phase, a recoverer must be willing to shift their focus from either searching for an external cause like a flu bug or virus, or waiting for the medical profession to come up with a definitive cure. The model of care that we offer is a biopsychosocial approach, because the old acute disease model of care of tests and of medication has left so many stuck in phase three. Once a person has taken the decision to do what is necessary themselves, they will have moved into phase four, and that's when everything changes. Phase four is called the internal search or the do what it takes phase. This is the phase where we can start to make recovery our own responsibility. We own our symptoms and can see clearly that this process of breakdown started long before in phase one. Recoverers totally grasp that the crash phase was the result of the final straw moment, when just one or two more stressors overwhelmed an already struggling system and acted as a tipping point that stopped us in our tracks. You may realise that over previous years there have been many crashes or relapses, and also better periods of remissions, so you know that being better is possible. Some people plateau here and stay in phase three. In phase four, though, inner work on our core values is one of the most important drivers of illness or recovery, as it highlights the unconscious choices and the rules we live by. You will work through this in session 13, which is called The Value of Values. Another part of recovery is finding a way to dissolve destructive beliefs we hold about ourselves and the habitual behaviours that will have contributed to causing our ill health. It's our beliefs that generate the thoughts and feelings that affect our emotional health. We tackle this one in session 19, You Are What You Believe, or Are You? This session is fascinating and will enable you to shine a torch on what goes on below the surface. This is a step-by-step process, and it takes a willingness to honestly address all areas that may have contributed towards your health breakdown. Some of the behaviours that characterise phase 4 internal search are eliminating behaviours and beliefs that are holding you back, looking at your lifestyle and pace prior to illness and choosing a more balanced approach to life, reviewing your diet and making healthy choices, committing to tackle the nutritional and physical changes required, reviewing your emotional health before the crash, examining the emotional triggers that are operating and creating anxiety, ending destructive relationships, learning to say no and meaning it, letting go of guilt and perfectionism, and integrating healthy exercise like yoga or Tai Chi to rebalance and reconnect you with your body. Developing a balanced life will become an absolute priority. This is a transformational phase where health begins to improve incrementally when you are having more good days than bad, and when you may begin to start thinking about a new direction or career, or have some aspirations and a vision beyond being ill. Once we begin to have a vision of how we want our new future to look, we have a purpose and a reason to get well and stay well. Hopefully by now you can see more clearly where you might be or have been at different stages of your health crash. Where do you think you are at the moment? Today on the Health Wheel, we will be looking at lifestyle and pace and life purpose areas of the wheel. Recovering lost health requires us to make changes. When we first get ill, we focused on our symptoms, which you know are many and varied. By its very definition, CFS, ME, fibromyalgia bring us a lot to cope with. This can consume us, and the more we focus on it, the more we are missing the real problem. The problems that caused us to become ill. Once we are brave enough, we can look beneath the symptoms and see what needs to change. Today, we're going to focus on one aspect that may need to change dramatically: our relationship with work and our work habits. This also includes our behaviours when we study or how much time we give helping everyone around us instead of looking after our own needs. We are creatures of habit. We naturally resist change and choose to stay comfortable, and we would rather feel uncomfortable doing what we know than be honest and stop doing it. And that is why we stick with a partner or spouse we are unhappy with. We say yes when we really want to say no. We work at a career we don't enjoy, or study for degrees that we don't really want to do, or was someone else's idea. Why? Because even though the impact of the above is extremely negative, it can seem preferable to the fallout of facing up to the truth and telling someone, "I can't do this anymore." Ask the legions of professional coaches and change management consultants who deal head-on with resistance to change. People continue to do things even though they are miserable because they think the sky will fall in if they own up. So, what has this got to do with fatigue-related illness? Well, denial can only last so long before it has an effect. The result is stress. And add to that the other factors like working long hours, poor diet, emotional upset, and you have a recipe for stress overload. We will deal with exactly what happens inside the body when we've been exposed to long-term stress in sessions 7, 11, and 21. But briefly, a stressed system produces hormone imbalances that detrimentally affect your immune system. With an impaired immune system, it's easy to see how viruses and/or system overload can be the catalyst for a domino effect. This domino effect causes your health to fail and provides an explanation for the myriad of symptoms that you ended up with when receiving a chronic diagnosis. Babies aren't born with chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia. but children suffer the symptoms. What stresses a child's system so much that their natural vitality is lost? It's a great question, and one that a colleague and one of our experts, Linda Cairns, faces every day in her work with children. Without fail, there will have been a trigger that underpins the illness, and many, many times there is an expectation of that child achieving something that they perhaps would not have chosen themselves. Illness can serve as an unconscious escape route. In fact, illness can be the body's way of rescuing you from a life that isn't really serving you. The academic and author Caroline Miss, in her book, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can, confirms this phenomena and states, quite controversially, "It has become apparent to me that assuming that everyone wants to heal is both misleading and potentially dangerous. Illness can, for instance, become a powerful way to get attention you might not otherwise receive. As a form of leverage, illness can seem almost attractive. Illness may also convey the message that you have to change your life most drastically. Because change is among the most frightening aspects of your life, you may fear change more intensely than illness and enter into a pattern of postponing the changes you need to make." Payoff of a debilitating illness is that people can't make demands on us. We can avoid doing the things that no longer serve us. And of course, it's the illness that gets blamed rather than the person. "I am sorry, I'm just not well enough," it's hard to argue with. If you are wanting to avoid the fallout of telling someone something that they won't want to hear, or you want to avoid guilt or upheaval, then illnesses take care of that. Before we focus on our behaviours around work and study, let's take a step back and get familiar with the fatigue and fibromyalgia profile, the characteristics and learned behaviours that predispose someone to a chronic exhaustive condition. The ME and fibromyalgia profile and the challenges we face. Having an A-type personality. Someone who is highly sensitive. Having a high expectation of the self. Often lives in the head, or an overthinker. Feels like a fish out of water. We will deal with the specific aspects of the predispositions and fatigue-prone profile in future sessions, so for now, let's just concentrate on the first two. The A-type personality. People who get the symptoms you identified on the health profile are usually, without exception, very busy, very dynamic people. They are the A-type personality, who are often the drivers and the strivers and the overachievers among us. Does that describe you? Overachievers, perfectionists, and overgivers are prime candidates for a breakdown of health. The overachiever can become addicted to work or sport or simply taking on far too much. We are familiar with the term workaholic, yet there is very little recognition of how much this can destroy health. This can also be true of children and young people who are studying very hard or putting themselves through a punishing schedule of extracurricular activities. In many cases, we see people who are overextending themselves in both arenas. A-types often have control or perfectionist issues, holding impossibly high expectations of themselves. Working to the point of exhaustion is a form of self-abuse. Putting everyone else's needs before your own is another form of the same thing. Often this group won't allow themselves any rest until they've helped everyone else and feel selfish or guilty if they think about putting their own needs first. Rest is only allowed when they have achieved perfection or are completely exhausted. This behaviour may stem from a family work ethic and can be driven by feelings of not being good enough. In many cases, though, it's due to taking on responsibilities too young. We cover this fully in future session 23, Expectation of Self. Recovery can happen when we become aware of the tendency of perfectionism and release the hold it has on us. it is great to get to a point where things can be okay or good enough without anxiety or the need for them to be perfect. Another trait is the highly sensitive self. When we talk here about being sensitive, it includes physically and emotionally sensitive. The A types usually appear to the outside world as though they are strong, capable, and have tremendous capacity to cope with a lot. The reality is that the tendency to keep going and push through is a coping mechanism to avoid facing up to something very painful or upsetting. Some people can shrug off teasing, criticism, rejection, or losses. If you are someone who feels these things very deeply, then you will probably tend to go over and over the upsetting thing in your mind and struggle to block it out when you are still. Being busy allows you not to face the pain. How can you recognize your level of sensitivity? In her work, The Highly Sensitive Person, Dr. Elaine Aron provides example of characteristic behaviours, and these are reflected in the questions she typically asks patients or interview subjects. Are you easily overwhelmed by such things as bright lights, strong smells, coarse fabrics, or sirens nearby? Do you get rattled when you have a lot to do in a short amount of time? Do you make a point of avoiding violent movies and TV shows? Do you need to withdraw during busy days into bed or a darkened room or some other place where you can have privacy and relief from the situation? Do you make it a high priority to arrange your life to avoid upsetting or overwhelming situations? Do you notice or enjoy delicate or fine scents, tastes, sounds, or works of art? Do you have a rich and complex inner life? When you were a child, did your parents or teachers see you as sensitive or shy? Do any of these points sound like you? It was a revelation to me that there were other people who felt like this, and again, as we do this work, we find high levels of sensitivity are found among those who suffer exhaustive conditions. Physically, this may mean reacting to chemical sensitivities like paint, medications, or metals in dental fillings. This is why amalgam fillings can cause havoc in some of us. What others can tolerate can be very toxic to a highly sensitive person. We have all read about a teenager who tried a recreational drug just once and it killed them. Their peers may have been able to tolerate the same chemicals regularly, seemingly without ill effect. The good news is once you are aware of your sensitivities, you can respect them and stay well. We have also identified other contributory factors: vaccines, oral contraceptives, antibiotics, viral infections, poor diet, lack of movement or inappropriate exercise, EMFs, electric magnetic fields, family dynamics, major life events or suppressed traumas, relationship issues, having a pressurized lifestyle and/or career. However, although we will look at all of these in future sessions, today we will focus on the last of these. In Carl Honor's work, In Praise of Slow, he highlights the culture of faster is better and explores the incredible fact that in 1980s in Japan, the first victim of karoshi, death by overwork, was 26-year-old Kamai Shujai. Kamai routinely put in 90-hour weeks as a stockbroker. By 2001, Honor tells us that the number of deaths from karoshi has risen to 143. Honor's work is worth reading. He notes that overwork is a health hazard. It leaves less time and energy for exercise and makes it more likely that we would drink too much alcohol or reach for convenience foods. Did you know that half of British adults said that their hectic schedules had caused them to lose touch with their friends? And the average parent spends twice as long dealing with emails as playing with the children. How hard did you push yourself before you became ill? It's worth asking people you know, because if you've always crammed a lot into your day, it will just seem normal to you, and you'll be chomping at the bit to get back to what you consider is normality. You may have done everything yourself because you couldn't rely on others to work to your high standards. Is any of this resonating with you? You may be feeling a bit uncomfortable right now. The important part is just recognizing it to be true. The trouble is that it's become a normal way of behaving, and when we look at others who have had a more laid-back approach, we may judge them as lazy or slow. This judgment is the result of an embedded belief system which emanates from our core values. Both values and beliefs are something we will examine in more detail in session 13, the value of values. In a later session, there will be another essential destination on the road to recovery. Not sure what the previous sentence is supposed to say? It's worth pondering what you feel about people who don't have the same drive to get things done. Elaine's experience. I was that person. I felt I could only do things because they had to be done a certain way. I would have endless to-do lists, which I added to every day. I would often feel like I had a mountain to climb and would carry on working into the night. I recognised this only when my symptoms stopped me from doing it anymore. I experienced severe anxiety at what I wasn't doing rather than focusing on healing. I was a machine, and I was horrified that I didn't work anymore. I remember reading that with ME, the body goes on strike and demands different working conditions. So, you must address your tendency to push yourself to the limit every time. As we have discussed, this may not be about your work. As we have discussed, this might not be about your work, as it's common for sufferers to have been high performers in a physical sport. The relapse cycle, phase 5, happens when you begin to pick up and feel better. You will push yourself too hard, too fast. The little energy reserve you have accumulated will be used up before you realise it's gone. You'll be running on empty and will simply relapse because you will not have changed how much you expect yourself to pack into a day. The word frustrating doesn't even cover it, does it? The feeling that you will never be able to get back to normal can overwhelm you if you don't fully understand why it happens. We explain this in more depth in session 9, the importance of your endocrine system. And once you understand the way energy is produced and how the backup systems work, you will understand relapses and how to avoid them. I made lists of everything I did or felt responsible for in a typical week. It filled 2 pages of foolscap paper. It was ridiculous. If you had advertised that job, no one would have applied for it. I also googled the word workaholic and was amazed to read descriptions that could have been about me. I learned that driven people don't feel they are good enough. They feel they have to work more, do more, be more than others to feel accepted. They will often define themselves by what they do, putting themselves and often those around them under severe stress. They thrive on hearing, "Wow, you're amazing. I don't know how you do it." My nickname was Wonder Woman Wilkins. When I couldn't do those things anymore, who was I? I also read about healing and realised I had to learn new ways to live if I were to get well and stay well. I had to learn the Mars bar lesson of making sure I could work, rest, and play. I watched healthy people and saw how they set clear boundaries between work, rest, and play. I saw how they would do their best and then let it go. Their focus was different from mine, as they spent time doing nothing and enjoyed it. Gradually, when you become an observer, willing to learn new ways of being, these layers of self-discovery drift to the surface and allow you to make bigger shifts that make the biggest differences to your health. One day, you'll find yourself able to say that one thing you had not dared to admit to yourself. Here is an excerpt from Elaine's book, Finding Me, The Authentic Self. I can remember the day I said the thing. Until that point, I dare not say. It was June 2005, and I sat on the floor in the Surrey townhouse we couldn't afford. And I said to my husband, Rob, I can't go back. I'm giving up my business, and it will mean we have to sell the house and downsize, and my car will have to go. I had fought so hard to keep it all together, to keep all the balls in the air. I had paid a huge price for continuing such a destructive path. Tears rolled down my cheeks as I finally voiced what others had recognised years earlier. I had allowed my work to consume me in such an unhealthy way that I had reduced my life to thinking and talking about work, mixing socially only with colleagues, and being available to anyone from work who needed me 7 days a week. I even kidded myself I had work-life balance because I work from home. In the following exercises, it is essential that you are completely honest with yourself. I cried and cried when I did this, but it was a springboard out of denial and into health. The first is a quiz that I filled in, which came from Workaholics Anonymous. Their website, www.workaholics-anonymous.org, says that if you answer yes to three or more, then you may have had workaholic tendencies. That doesn't mean you can't change. You can. That is exactly what this is about. There are four exercises for this session that will really help you assess your experience of your life and work patterns. Remember to do a little at a time. A little each day. Or set aside a good time for you to do these important well-being activities. It's much better to do it step by step so as not to feel overwhelmed. Exercise 1, the Workaholics Anonymous quiz. This comes from the official website and it is an eye-opener. If you are concerned about this, then they do have a book you can order and many other resources too. Exercise 2, the Work-Life Balance /Stocktake exercise. This one is fantastic for delving into our learned behaviours relating to work. Exercise 3 is called the Wheel of Life exercise, a brilliant tool for helping you to see how much focus you are giving to each area of your life, so you can see how balanced or unbalanced your life is. It will give you a snapshot of today and help you gain clarity about what is working just fine and what needs to change first. Exercise 4, the well-being exercise, the blank canvas. You have seen where you are now, you can dream and imagine the life you are about to create. You are the artist adding the colour and texture to your new life. You get to choose with the hindsight of the wisdom this spell of ill health has given you. It is important that you don't limit yourself. Just write down what you truly want. A huge part of recovery is having a direction to head towards. Later in the program, we show you how you can break dreams into very achievable goals. But for now, take yourself to your wonderful, compelling future. If the weather is sunny, take a walk. It doesn't matter how short it is. Even if it is just to the end of the road, it will shift that stagnant energy. Aim to do that every other day. If the weather is not on your side, do some gentle stretching exercises. Start with your fingers and then your toes, saying stretch and relax. Then move to your legs and arms, bend them and then stretch and relax. You will get the energy moving. Visualize yourself running along a beautiful beach and imagine the exhilaration of feeling fit and full of vitality. Spirituality nourisher, bathing by candlelight. Light candles when you have a bath and find some music that soothes you and play that very quietly at the same time. Write a card or letter to someone you feel lucky to have in your life and tell them why. As we send kind words to someone, we feel lifted ourselves. External world, cut down on the telly. How much TV are you watching? Really, monitor just how many hours. TV is an AER, an automatic experience reducer. Add up the time you spend watching and decide to cut down. Use the time you would normally watch TV to listen to the chrysalis effect and think about a new dream or hobby that would make you happy. Imagine you can do anything you want to do and make a list in your journal of all your ideas. We look forward to hearing about your wonderful plans and what happened when you examined your old life. Not many people can start over. This is your opportunity. Starting over means letting go of the old. Starting over means embracing the new. Starting over means you have the wisdom to know better. Nobody can go back and start a new beginning, but anyone can start today and make a new ending. Maria Robinson. I look forward to being with you on session 7.